shall begin. Perek Tetvav, chapter 15. Oh, and before I forget, I've been given flyers for Nishmat's summer program. I was asked to distribute that. Here. Summer program is around. Dorfheim. Okay. Thanks. So, Perek Tetvav, chapter 15, gives us the boundaries of Yehuda, and then eventually it will give us also the individual cities that are in Yehuda. So keep in mind, we've already seen a little bit, Yehuda is the entire southern portion of the land, pretty much. And we'll have to define how far south southern actually goes. It doesn't go down to Eilat, although we'll discuss exactly how far it does go. But that whole area, going up north until almost Yerushalayim, belongs to Yehuda. So, and Shimon will get cities within it. But what we're going to see here is the definition of that land. We already talked about last time the idea that Yehuda goes first, Yehuda going first for many things. So we begin. Vayhi ha-goral lemate b'nei Yehuda lemishpachosam. The lottery was, and we discussed how the lottery worked, and what was decided by the lottery. Was it regions that were decided by the lottery? Was it the general boundaries? And then they divided up the individual cities based on what the families needed. That we talked about. But the lottery determined, lemate b'nei Yehuda, for the tribe of Yehuda, lemishpachosam, for their families, el givul edom. We're now getting the southern border. Okay, from the boundary of Edom, Midbar Tzin, Negba, Mikzei Teman. So the southern border is the boundary of Edom. Edom is generally speaking in the southeast. That's usually what we're talking about. So southeast, Midbar Tzin, a term you may recognize from Chumash, Negba. To the south, Mikzei Teman, the edge of Teman. And Teman itself doesn't mean Yemen, it means the land to the south. The basis for that is likely when you're facing east, where the sun rises, your right, Yamin, is south. Hence the idea that Teman would refer to the south. You follow? Now, Tzafon does not end up being small, so it falls apart a little bit there. But that's the origin of Teman being Yamin, as Teman being the south, as I understand it. What is the other term that we use for south? We use it right here? Negba. Right? Why would Negba refer to the south? Don't say because of the Negev, because it works the other way. What is a magevet in Hebrew?
A towel,
right. Naguv is something that is dried. And so when you have this dry land to the south, it's a desert, that gets the name Negev, and therefore Negva becomes towards the Negev. So when I said it's actually the other way around, it's not. The truth is, Negba is to the south, Negev means south, because that dry land in the south is called Negev. Darom I can't explain. But we're told that the south is theirs, but what's the border? How far does this go? Vayihi lahem gvul Negev. Their southern border was Mikze Yam HaMelach. From the edge of Yam HaMelach, the Dead Sea, Min HaLashon HaPone Negva. From the tongue of it that points south. And what they're talking about is at the bottom of Yam HaMelach. Actually, I'm not going to move this map anymore because I got what I wanted to find on there, and it's not budging. But okay, the article shows you Yam HaMelach terminates in the south with two tongues. It isn't a solid bottom; it's actually forked. Now, the truth of the matter is that, as we'll see more in a moment, that has changed over time. Yam HaMelach rises and falls over time, and if people tell you it's global warming, global warming may play a factor, may play a role, but this has actually been going on for thousands of years. The Yam HaMelach goes up, and Yam HaMelach goes down, and when the water level rises, it floods more of the area, and so the shape of these two tongues that emerge from Yam HaMelach will likewise change. But in the day of Yehoshua, it is indeed formed of these two tongues, and we're told that the southern pointing one is the one we care about for the border. This actually creates problems, because when you have to define the halachic boundaries of the land of Israel, and you don't know what they were referring to back in the day, that becomes very difficult in terms of where it is now. Right now, Yam HaMelech is at a very low point, right? Presumably you've seen articles about just how low. It's a problem. But that means that you have exposed land there that likely was not within the boundaries of the land of Israel originally, but we don't know just how much of it was not within the boundary of the land. So that's a tricky point. But you're working from the Dead Sea, from Yam HaMelech, and then Viatsa El Minegev Lamale Akrabim. And then the border then emerges from the south to a place called Male Akrabim. The border is now heading west. Now, Male Akrabim is a problem in terms of identifying exactly where it is. I'm going to give you a couple of sources on it in a minute. But assume right now you're heading from east to west, from Yam HaMelech, from the Dead Sea, toward the Mediterranean. So at some point there's a juncture called Male Akrabim that you're hitting with this border. The Avar Tzina, to a place called Tzin, not to be confused with Midbar Tzin. The Allah Minegev, and it goes up from the south, the Kadesh Barnea, to the place called Kadesh Barnea, the Avar Chetzron, to Chetzron, the Allah Adara, to a place called Adar, the Nasab HaKarka, and then finally to a place called Karka. And then, Pasuk Dalet, sentence 4, we're still in Perek Tet Vav, chapter 15, V'avar Atzmona, it goes to Atzmon, V'yatza Nachal Mitzrayim, to the river of Egypt, V'yutotz Os HaGavul Yama, and then the border concludes towards the Mediterranean, Zeh Yelachem Gavul Negev, that is your southern border of Yehuda, and therefore of the land of Israel. So you can imagine, roughly, a line going from the bottom of the Dead Sea across to hit the Mediterranean, and something called Nachal Mitzrayim, with a bunch of cities it's striking along the way. But let's see if we can get a little bit better in terms of the detail. So as I said, there are problems with identifying the southern edge of Yam HaMelech. We've seen shifts, even in the last 100 years, we've seen shifts between 370 and 400 meters below sea level. Which, you know, 370 to 400, you think, well, that's not so much, but 30 meters in height is huge, right? In a century, for it to vary like that. And again, it's not because of the salt works, it's not because of some global crisis, it's because of the flows of water into Yam HaMelech and general climate factors. As a matter of fact, I brought you on your sheet source number 1 from Josephus, from his Wars of the Jews, where he describes a lake called Lake Asphaltitis, right? Asphaltitis would be Yam HaMelech, the Dead Sea, named for its minerals. The nature of the Lake Asphaltitis, I don't have any more sheets, sorry, is also worth describing. The length of this lake is 580 furlongs. Josephus didn't write furlongs, this was the translator who did that. Where it is extended as far as Tsoar in Arabia, and its breadth is 150 furlongs. The country of Sodom borders upon it, which we know, right? Because that's what Lot finds so attractive, is this area by Yam HaMelech. But when he says here it goes as far as Tsor in Arabia, today that is identified as a place called in Hebrew Kfar Tzafi, or in Arabic Ghor Safi, which is in Jordan. And it is significantly east of where Yam HaMelech terminates today. So in Josephus' day, which is 2,000 years ago, you have a much higher water level, and therefore it's spreading out as it floods the plateau. It's much different from what it is today, and that's a challenge a little bit. But then you head west, and we're told that you go to Male Akrabim. So Male Akrabim, I thought, was worth taking a minute to talk about, because it's really a fascinating question. There's a Male Akrabim today that is 45 kilometers southwest of the Dead Sea. Okay, so that would be if you were looking at Male Akrabim today. The problem is we're not. We're looking at what Male Akrabim would have been for them. So Rashi in Chumash Bamidbar at the end says that Male Akrabim is actually northwest of the end of the Dead Sea, meaning that you're starting your border at the bottom, and then you're going up. However, nobody else agrees. In the language here that we used when we talked about going through Ma'ale Akrabim, V'yatzal minegev l'Ma'ale Akrabim does not seem to indicate that it's going upward. It just sounds like it's maybe lateral, as opposed to going upward. It can't be that. It's very difficult to sustain the view that it will be north of the bottom of the Dead Sea. Yeah.
I'm just wondering if 580 furlongs, how does that just compare to today, the size of
I don't know. I couldn't even tell you how long a furlong is, except that they're involved in horse races. I mean, that actually we can find out. Yeah, I mean, you go to Google and you write in furlongs to teaspoons and they'll tell you. Right, so a furlong is 201 meters and change. But I don't know how long the Dead Sea is today and so on and so forth. It would be a good question, but I don't know.
So 5 furlongs.
580 furlongs. So yeah, 5 furlongs is going to be a kilometer. So you're talking about another 116 or so kilometers. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay,
now we've solved the problem.
Yeah, but you could actually then Google Maps.
Yeah, we could. The question is how far we want to go with this. Right. Yeah, if you find... according to Google Maps, actually, the Dead Sea is only 50 kilometers long today. Wow, so it's less than half. Yeah, 50 kilometers long and 15 kilometers wide. It's a remarkable difference. I have a fellow who listens to the recordings of the Yehoshua Shiur. I mean, he always emails me about stuff like this, so he'll fill me in here. But but in terms of Ma'ale Akrabim, so again, Rashi puts it as northwest of the bottom of Yam HaMelech, but that's very difficult to support. Rav Chaim Kanievsky, if you take a look at source number 2, argues that it basically has to be west of the bottom of Yam HaMelech. And his reason for it, well, first let's see what he says. He says, Amnam gvul dromi shel eretz Yisrael ein holech bekav yashar mamash. He says, the southern boundary of Israel is not a straight line. Minachal Mitzrayim l'ktzei Yam HaMelech, from Nachal Mitzrayim, this river of Egypt, to the bottom of Yam HaMelech. Da'aksiv v'parshas Maaseh v'nasav ha'gavul and v'yatzah ha'gavul. Because we're going to use terms in Parshas Maaseh, they use it in Yehoshua, to say the boundary turns and it extends, suggesting that there are changes as you go along. It's not direct line. Umikomako mistaber shein yotzei harbe, but he says logically it doesn't veer greatly. And his reason for saying it is, once you visualize what's going on, you see immediately why he says this. The Torah tells us in Parshas Maaseh that, and it's more or less here as well, that the eastern border is going to be Yam HaMelech. Then you have your southern border, and then you're going to go to the Mediterranean, which is going to be your western border. Right? That's how you look at it in your head. Well, if Ma'ale Akrabim was more south than it is west, right? So you have... I need the blueberries back. If you have Yam HaMelech here, and then you have Ma'ale Akrabim down here, you wouldn't identify the Yarden and Yam HaMelech as your eastern border anymore. Because Ma'ale Akrabim being down here would be part of the eastern border. You would say your eastern border runs down to Ma'ale Akrabim. By positioning Ma'ale Akrabim along the southern border, it has to be more west of Yam HaMelech than it is south. You follow? We'll use these. If imagine this is Yam HaMelech, okay, and here's Ma'ale Akrabim, and then here over here is Nachal Mitzrayim. So if Ma'ale Akrabim is more here, then I would call it part of the southern border of Israel. I'm not southern side, part of the eastern border of Israel. I wouldn't call it part of the southern border that goes this way. The fact that he calls it part of the southern border, a juncture there, suggests it's got to be more to the west of Yam HaMelech. That's Rabbi Kanievsky's argument. The reason why he emphasizes it is because he's writing, as you see in source number 2, on the laws of Truma, meaning the boundaries of Israel for all sorts of issues, tithing, Shemitah, Yovel, and so on. you need to know where it extends. It's a major halachic issue. It came up in the Shemitah Shiurim that I gave on the borders of Israel for Shemitah purposes, because there are various plant nurseries and farms that are just south of Yam HaMelech. And the question is, are they in Israel or are they not in Israel? If they're not, open season for Shemitah. So it's something that you really do need to have some kind of a practical answer on, which the Rabbanut does regularly. Every 7 years, they have a different practical answer. But the that may be a little of an exaggeration, but not much. So Kanievsky argues that it has to be further west. It can't be under Yam HaMelech. It has to be further to the west and not veering too far to the south. That's Rav Kanievsky's point, Rav Efrati, Rav Koren, various others as well. And then you get a very strange view, which I bring just because it's important for people to understand that Eilat is not within the biblical boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. It's just not there. And I'll prove it to you by showing you some of what it was. If you take a look at source number 3, Rabbi Yechiel Michal Tukhachinsky, one of the really great halachic authorities of the early 20th century, wrote a work called Eretz Yisrael, in which he, among other things, defines the boundaries. And he writes, "Umikevan shemalei akrabim hu kitzei hagvul hadromi." He says, since Malei Akrabim is the southernmost boundary, aleinu ladas biikar ayehu mekom Malei Akrabim. We need to know where it is. Vine beis es farim geografiim v'gam b'mispar mapot misumanam alei akrabim lo rachok mikitzei hadromi shel Yam HaMelech. So he says he's found in various books as well as maps that it's not far from the southern edge of Yam HaMelech, in b'merchak 23 kilometrim or 40 to 50 kilometrim, 23, 40, 50, you can see. Avol halom meforash b'krush shehu al yad eretz Edom. But he says it doesn't work because Malei Akrabim is supposed to be bordering the land of Edom, which is true. But he says that is rachok me'ot kilometrim mikitzei Yam HaMelech. He says that's hundreds of kilometers from the Dead Sea. Zos omeres al yad Eilat. He says it should be next to Eilat, the southern boundary. Ir hachof asher al svas yam suf hamizrachit. He says the shore city that is on the eastern end of the Yam Suf. What he's talking about is what we call the Gulf of Aqaba. That's what he says is where Malei Akrabim is, which is by Eilat. Oh, he says, Hanikra Bazmanenu Yam Aqaba. Excellent. The Va'amnam. Anu Shom Imsh Rabbeinu Sadja Gaon Tirgei Malei Akrabim Aqaba. He says, in fact, Sadja Gaon, in his Aramaic translation of Torah, translates Malei Akrabim as Aqaba, which is the Gulf of Aqaba. So one of the things that's always complicated is when you try to identify locations based on the names that the Arabs are using for them, because they're not necessarily on the same spot. The fact that they mention the same name does not indicate a whole lot necessarily. But that's his position. And it comes up in the Tzitz Eliezer, Eliezer Waldenberg, regarding the question of whether a Jew who's in Eilat for Yom Tov has to keep Yom Tov Sheni or not. Do you see that's in Israel, or do you say maybe that's actually out? So, all sorts of interesting questions. Well, Rav Zalman Koren, in dealing with this question, is absolutely apoplectic. He says, what in the world are you talking about? It can't be. It makes no sense whatsoever to put it in the Gulf of Aqaba. First of all, it's too far east, and therefore we come back to the question of whether it's on the southern border of Israel or whether it's over to the east.
I mean, you wouldn't even know the eastern border, right? Because Yam HaMelech, there's such a gap there, it could go further east.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yam HaMelech is still going to be your eastern boundary at that point.
But if you're all the way down here, like how far does that go?
Right. I mean, you have to just draw a line and say, this is a straight line.
Right.
But that's one problem. But he says it also defies the normal ways that we calculate where things are in terms of the boundaries of Israel. We have actually three different ways that we try to calculate the southern boundary of Israel. One is the method we're using right now, the points in Parshas Maaseh and in Sefer Yoshua. The second way that we do it is with the Rambam in Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh, the laws of sanctifying the new moon. So the Rambam talks about where you should be able to see the moon in Israel, and he gives you lines of latitude to work with, and that's a second system. And then the third system uses the Arei Miklat, the cities of refuge. Mm-hmm. Remember that there are supposed to be six cities of refuge with another three coming in the time of Mashiach. they're aligned north-south. Three of them are on the eastern side of the Yarden. Three of them are on the western side of the Yarden. We'll get more about that, actually, when we get to that later in Yoshua. But the way it works is the Jews are told, "V'shilashta es gevul artzecha," you shall divide up the land into thirds, which is actually quarters, because the way it works is you want the cities to be equidistant so that anybody, wherever the accidental murder takes place, anywhere in the land, will have an equal journey to get to the city of refuge. You don't want to cluster them in one area and then someone, you know, kill somebody by accident and, you know, far away, and now he's stuck. So that we're actually told, as explained by Rashi and others, that it's supposed to be a precise division. Which means if I know where my cities of refuge are, I can figure out where my borders are. You follow? If we say, pretending for a moment that your northern border is where B and Roberta are, and this is city number one, this is city number two, city number three, and just calculate the distance between them, and then you'll get, you know, add it here, and you've got your southern boundary. And in fact, we can do that. Yeah.
I just have a question. What about the land that Hashem promised Abraham? You know, we see it in the Gula, you know, of Anan, you know, the whole boundary. So can't you get the southern boundary from that?
Right. Excellent question. So the general approach to that is that that's a border for the times of Mashiach. That's not a current one. But the question does get raised and discussed.
Right.
It includes an awful lot. Yeah. Yes, the Arab world is not happy about that whole thing. But using this, we know that two of the Arei Miklat that are in the land itself are Hebron and Shechem. Those are your middle one and your southern one. So based on that, you should be able to take the distance from Hebron to Shechem and then apply it lower, and that will be your boundary. So Rav Koren looks at this. It's not the same Rav Koren as the Koren publishers. But he tries that, and he says, you're not getting anywhere near a lot. There's no way, in no way, shape, or form, are you anywhere near a lot at that point. Further, he points out that the land of Edom is on the boundary of Yamsuf, is on the edge of the Yamsuf. So you can't tell me that our southern border is on the Yamsuf also. Our southern border is supposed to bound the land of Edom. The land of Edom starts at Yamsuf. So he points that out as well. But his best response, he has many, many responses to this, but his best response is to point out that the word Aqaba in Arabic actually means a ma'alet. Like an outcropping or not an overlook as a mitzvah, but it's a sort of elevated area. So when Rav Sadja Gaon translated Male Akrabim as Aqaba, he was translating the word Male. He wasn't identifying the space. He was using the word Aqaba to mean Male. It's Aqaba Akrabim, effectively. The point is, it cannot possibly be identified with a lot. So there is debate as to where exactly it is, but basically our general assumption is that it is somewhere west, not too far off in latitude from the southern edge of the Dead Sea. That's what we're essentially saying. We are not clear on where the various through points that are mentioned in sentence 3, sentence 4 are, but he tells us it ends at Nahal Mitzrayim and the Mediterranean. So what would you define as the river of Egypt? So the Nile is certainly a common answer to this, to say that it's the Nile. What's the problem with saying it's the Nile? The Nile does hit the Mediterranean, but that's not the problem. Sorry?
I was going to say it doesn't come. It's nowhere near where we're talking about.
Yeah. The problem with the Nile is that it's in Egypt.
Yeah.
Right? It's not our boundary. It's not even close. So the question then is, so what is the river of Egypt? So the usual place that is identified is a place called Wadi al-Arish. That's the usual site. Now, a wadi is not a river. A wadi is an area that floods when there's a lot of rain, and then eventually it'll dry out. But nonetheless, the tendency is to assume that it's Wadi al-Arish is in fact Nahal Mitzrayim. That fits very well with some of the other systems of finding the southern boundary of Israel, there is an approach that says it's the Nile. Rashi in Yehoshua actually says that it is the Nile. But it creates big problems, and not only that we would be annexing part of Egypt, which, you know, politically may be an issue, but it also doesn't fit for other reasons. The Gemara in Gittin talks about the boundaries of the land of Israel as well, and it says that if you extend a line westward from Nachal Mitzrayim, it's talking about how Israel extends into the Mediterranean. What is the sea sort of boundary of Israel? And it talks about going from Nachal Mitzrayim west and thereby including certain islands in the Mediterranean as part of the land. The problem is that the Nile is not situated that way on the Mediterranean. I feel like I really should lose this in order to explain this on here.
Can you minimize that and open up another one?
Open up another one. That may be a good idea. Right. So they're putting it to the east of what?
Yamanala.
Yeah, there is such a view, but it's generally not accepted. That's funny that they put it on there. Okay, fine. There is such a view that Malei Akrabim is southeast. True. But, the boundary... Let me see. Hopefully I won't mess up what I've done on the other one by doing this. But it's a max, so I don't have much faith.
Oh, sorry.
If I were a graphic designer, I would use a Mac. If I was a graphic designer, I would use a Mac. But, Okay. It's because Mac and PC is personal for some people. So, here is Egypt. And the Nile is running here. But more or less... Actually, I need to zoom it out. I know, and I need to zoom it out anyway in order to get where I wanted to go with it. And you'll see what I'm talking about. The Nile is emerging here. Okay? Let the record show. The Nile is emerging here. If you're saying that you're going to draw a line west from there and include islands from the Mediterranean as part of Israel, your border of the Mediterranean is actually arcing north. What you will end up is including part of Libya in Israel. Yeah, like the Ugandans. So that's one of the problems with doing this. Whereas if I take it as Wadi al-Arish down here, maybe I'm including islands that are in this sort of southern lull before I get there. But if you're going from here, you've got Libya.
It's more logical, but it's not.
It's a very difficult idea to
say. Like, we lack Egypt, so why would we be like...
Well, the argument would be, you know, this isn't Egypt, it's actually ours. That would be their response.
Well, you never heard that before, did you?
That all the way down there is ours? It actually raises some interesting questions about Goshen. There's more to say about it. But the point is that it's difficult to sustain the association with the Nile. The main advantage of associating it with the Nile is the Nile is the most famous Egyptian river, and it's actually a river, as opposed to Wadi al-Arish, which is a river when it floods, and then it's not a river when it doesn't flood. There are other arguments for back and forth about this, and Rabbi Kanievsky, in source number 4, actually tries to harmonize the two. And he points out something which I didn't realize until I started giving shiurim on Shemitah and had to look at this. Did you know the Nile flows north? I usually think that rivers have to flow south. Like, south is down,
right?
Well,
they have to go into
a sea.
It goes into the Mediterranean.
Right, but why isn't it flowing from the Mediterranean?
Yeah, why wouldn't it?
The answer is because this thing that Newton discovered. It's called gravity. And the land slopes downward. It's going to go north. It doesn't matter that it's north. It matters that it's down. That's really what determines it. So the Nile, as Rabbi Kanievsky, who apparently knows this also, in source number 4, notes, the Nile flows upward and falls into the Mediterranean. and Ramban knew it as well, and that it then sort of goes along the Mediterranean. And so his argument is that maybe Nahal Mitzrayim means the beginning of the Nile, or the end, depending on how you look at it, but at that termination of the Nile isn't that far from Nahal Mitzrayim. That's his argument that I brought in number four.
Isn't it possible that this Nahal Arish at one time was filled with water, but now with climate change over 2,000 years, that it, at that time it had water and now it doesn't?
Entirely possible. I have no idea. I don't know. I haven't seen it suggested.
There was a river somewhere that we don't know where it is today.
Hypothetically possible also. Disheartening, because I'd like to know what borders are.
Yeah.
But hypothetically, yeah. Okay, and there's more to be said in terms of the proofs for this, but that's some sense of what we're dealing with for the southern border. After you see the southern border, the eastern border is easy. If you take a look at Pasuk Hey, sentence 5, Uguvul Kedma, the eastern border of Yehuda, is Yam HaMelach, from the Dead Sea, and as I said, it doesn't identify Malei Akrabim south of there as part of the border. Ad Kitzei HaYarden, to the edge of the Yarden, Uguvul, and its surrounding area, Lifas Safona, to the north, Milashon Hayam Mikzei HaYarden, from the literally the tongue of the sea, the edge of the Yarden. All of that is going to be Yehuda. So you're talking about a very large area as it goes south to north that we're going to be willing to include. It actually, on here, to use the dot mikra's map. So basically what you're saying is, if assuming this is Nahal al-Arish, or Wadi al-Arish, here, you're going from Wadi al-Arish to here, with some veering off from Malei Akrabim, southward. But you're basically here, or maybe here is a better way to say it, and going all the way up to the top of Yam HaMelach, almost Yerushalayim. That's what we're talking about. That whole chunk of the land is Yehuda. You follow? Sorry? Much of it is going to be dry, yes. Okay. There's a lot we have to see here, but that's the eastern border. And now we get to the problem, which is, or not a problem, it's not a problem, it's a challenge. The northern border. And if you do get a hold of the Dot Mikra edition, I noted on source number 5 that they have a nice map on page Kuf Lamed Zayin of the Dot Mikra, where they're going to show you better detail for where certain cities and border markers are for Yehuda. So we're not ready exactly for that map. Yeah, you don't pay attention to the cities right now. Pay attention to the northern part of it, the very thick black dotted line. That's the northern boundary of Yehuda. So it's worth seeing. Okay. I tried to find it online to see if there was anywhere I could get it and email it out, but no luck. Okay. So looking at Pasuk Vav, sentence 6, we are going to embark on this adventure of trying to identify the northern boundary of Yehuda. And here I'm going to draw heavily on the place names in Arabic that Dot Mikra chooses to bring forward. So, Pasuk Vav, the border is now going to be the northern border of Yehuda, running from east to west. Ve'alah ha'givul, the border ascends from Yam HaMelach, because it's ending, we're starting at the northern part of Yam HaMelach. It goes upward to a place called Beit Chagla. And Beit Chagla is our first stop on Google Maps. It is 6 kilometers southeast of Yericho. So on Google Maps, they actually put it, this Ein Hajla, as they call it. Here we go. This is, and again, I'm sorry for not being that visible. Oh, okay, then turn the camera, please, yeah.
Still fuzzy.
Okay, they put Ein Hajla as... Oops.
Where are we? With the top of the
Here we go. Okay, here is Route 1. Route 1 is going to run east-west, just south of Yerushalayim. Not that far, actually, from the boundary of Yehuda. It actually does a pretty good job of approximating the boundary of Yehuda. So, Ein Hajla is about here. You're going from Yam HaMelech. Maybe I'll outward zoom it. There you go. Here's the northern edge of Yam HaMelech, at least as it is today. You're going up to about here on Route 90. This is Route 1. This is Yericho. So Yericho is not in Yehuda's property. It's going to be Binyamin's property for whatever he's going to do in developing Yericho. But this is basically your starting point for where Yehuda's boundary begins. You follow? From there, you're then going to the north of Beit Arava, which is next to Wadi Kelt. I know Wadi Kelt because I always saw road signs for Wadi Kelt. That's about how I know Wadi Kelt. But it's a stream that's going to take you from Yericho to Yerushalayim, which is over here. So it's a body of water somewhere roughly here, and that's your next stop, is that area. And then it goes up to a place called Eben Bohan Ben Reuven, which Dat Mikra says some associate with a place called Hajar al-Asba, which is not on here anyway, but it's going to be somewhere over here. So basically what you've done is you've gone up this way and then somewhat across. Now, I hate to make people stand up and sit down and stand up and sit down, but there's one thing that should be noted here before we go further with this. So go take a look at your sheets, please. A quick line from Rashi, but a very important one. The verb used in this pasuk when it describes the boundary going up to Beit Chagla or Ein Hajla, it says Ve'Allah, it goes upward. So what do you mean when you say it goes upward? No. So one way to do it is to say what Rashi does in source number 6. Komasha holech ad Yerushalayim hu oleh. Anything going to Yerushalayim is ascending. Meaning it's not about topography, it's not about geography, it's actually a statement of Kedusha. You go to Yerushalayim, you're going upward. And that is borne out in the Psukim, because all the way to Yerushalayim, the next three Psukim, it's going to keep saying Ve'Allah. It goes up, and then it's going to stop saying it afterwards. As the border continues west, you won't see Ve'Allah anymore. So that's one way to take it. Radak notes that actually makes a lot of sense, because when you get to Pasuk Chet, it's going to talk about the border going to a place called Gei Ben Hinnom, which is a valley. You've probably seen it in Yerushalayim, and you're familiar with what it stands for. But Gei Ben Hinnom is a valley. If it meant, topographically, you're going upward, you wouldn't go up into a valley. It doesn't make any sense. So you could justify it and say, you're going up towards Yerushalayim in general, and therefore we call that up also. Because the general topography is that the land is flowing upward, you're going up into a mountainous area, and Gei Ben Hinnom can be included in that. You could get away with it if you wanted to. However, Rashi simply says it's spiritual ascension. Whereas Mitzudat David and Dat Mikra say, no, it's about going up from the low topography, because, keep in mind, you're coming from the Dead Sea, right? Lowest place on earth. Yeah. You are working your way upward. It's only a question of how specific we're going to be in saying it really is upward. But those are two different explanations of Ve'Allah.
But it is up, though, isn't it? Yerushalayim is higher. Topographically, it's higher.
Right. Until you get to the Gei Ben Hinnom line.
Right.
The Gemara is going to have more to say on this. We're going to see a Gemara in a little bit, in source number 8, that's going to have something to say. But the other thing I wanted you to see on your sheet, just because I put effort into it, so I want you to see it, in number 7, are, if you are curious about these locations that we're pointing out along the way, I found either literary references or pictures in different websites. So they're here in source number 7, just sites along the northern boundary. You can go home and click on them and tour. Okay, so we have Beit Chagla. Beit Chagla technically is actually a city in Binyamin, but it's the northern boundary of Yehuda. Then you go to Beit Arava. We pointed out that was the one that the Mikra says was next to Wadi Kelt. And Beit Arava is actually a city that later in this chapter is going to be in, we're told, is in Yehuda. But in the 18th parak, we're going to say it's in Binyamin. So that Mikra suggests there was a border running through the city, which I find odd because I don't know why they would do that. No, it's not like today where you have a political reason for creating a boundary and we'll create a boundary. These are shvatim. You're going to put, half of the city is going to be occupied by Binyamin and half by Yehuda. It's a very strange idea. We may do that with Yerushalayim. We'll have to see that. But short of it being Yerushalayim, why would you do that? So I favor the approach of Mitzudat David, who says there are probably two cities named Beit Arava. That just means house of the plains. It's not as though it's such a crazy thing that you would have two places named for the same geographic feature. And then it goes to this.
Niagara Falls, New York, and Niagara Falls.
There you go. Could be. But who gets to run Maid of the Mist? Not such a problem in Israel. And then the last city we mentioned in Pasuk Vav has this very odd name. Evan Bohan Ben Reuven. What is a Bohan in Hebrew?
Thami.
Right. Yes, you are correct. If you ever learned anything in Sefer Vayikra, so you know from times when they have to place oil on the thumb of, or I think blood at one point, on the Kohen's thumb, it says Bohen Yado Ayamanit and Bohen Raglo Ayamanit. It's the thumb. So the stone of the thumb of Ben Reuven. So what in the world is that? So Radak says it was just a border marker, and Ben Reuven was some Canaanite chief. That's his suggestion. But Dan Mikra says that it's actually this place I mentioned before, Hajar el Aspa. Aspa being Etzba. And in fact, it was a stone that was shaped that way, and that's how it got that name. Okay. That brings us to Pasuk Zion. And Pasuk Zion, it continues west. The Alaha Gavul Devira, the border extends Devira. Devira is not a known place for us, or Devir for that matter. That Mikra suggests it might be a region used for grazing. The Dalet Bet Resh root may be a term for grazing. And then, Velagbol Devira, me Emek Achor, from Emek Achor, Vitzafona, Pone El HaGilgal. It goes north, and it turns towards the Gilgal. Now, we've seen various places called Gilgal. This is not the Gilgal where they camped when they first entered the land. Gilgal is a geographic term, and there are multiple Gilgalim, so to speak. Asher nochach leMa'ale Adumim. And this is the Gilgal, which is facing Ma'ale Adumim. Not Ma'ale Adumim that we have today in Yerushalayim, which is named for this Ma'ale Adumim. So how does a place get the name Ma'ale Adumim? Ma'ale, it's an upper area. But the Dan Mikra suggests that they had red rocks there from phosphates in the rock. And he actually identifies it with a place called Wadi Talat Adam, which Wadi, we know, Adam of, or the, blood. That it would have had the same image, the water being dyed red from the red stones and sand that you have in the area. So this is taking us further west to a place called Hashem Negev LaNachal, that is south of this stream that he's been following, which I think may still be Wadi Kelt. Ve'avara Gavul El Mei Ein Shemesh, the boundary goes to the waters of Ein Shemesh, which I've seen rendered as Ein El Habs. Ve'ayutos Osav El Ein Rogel. And then it ends at Ein Rogel. So Ein Rogel is really where I wanted to... No, I don't want to install anything. Stop that. Max. Sorry, I can't do that to you. I just want to tell it to go away. I'm not going to be able to get this thing to go away. Okay, there we go. No, it's fine. It's fine, because now I know exactly what I have to find anyway. So, it'll be a lot easier to play with this now. Okay. What we're going to now see, if you remember the... we're not. We are out of luck. We're out of charge. It's all right. It went black already. Okay. So I'll explain it. It's fine one way or the other. But the... But what happens when you get to Ein Rogel is actually the place where it enters a geography that we are more familiar with. Ein Rogel is southeast of the old city of Yerushalayim. It's where Gei Ben Hinnom meets Nachal Kidron. That's the key. Gei Ben Hinnom is the south side of the old city. It was a place of Avodah Zarah. That's how it got its association with Gei Hinnom. Yeshaya criticizes the people there. So, the Gei Ben Hinnom is the south side. Nachal Kidron is the east side. The Gemara talks about how liquids that were poured on the Mizbeach, on the altar, would drain out into Nachal Kidron, east. So that, if you can then imagine, Ein Rogel is simply southeast. That's where this place is. So you're now at the southeastern edge of the old city. That's where Pasuk Zayin ends. Are we clear on that? Yeah, on that point. Okay. The Allah Gavul gave and He know. Yes, I've seen that reference. The Spring of Job. Good enough, you know, that he should suffer by being associated with Gei Ben Hinnom. That's all he needs. But the Pasuk then says, Ve'alah Gavul Gei Ben Hinnom, the boundary then goes through Gei Ben Hinnom, south of the old city, El Kesef HaYevusi, by the edge of, the boundary of the Yevusi, because Yevus controlled Yerushalayim, Minagev, to the south, he Yerushalayim, he tells you that is Yerushalayim, Vala Gvul al Rosh Ahar, Asher al Pnei Gehinom Yama, Asher Biktei Emek Rifaim Tzafona. The way Da Mikra renders this is that there is some kind of a peak on the eastern side of Gei Ben Hinnom, and then there's another one on the western side of it. And this is where it's kind of a mountainous ridge. That on that ridge, you have today Abu Tor, Mishkanot Sha'ananim, and Yamin Moshe. If you can picture where the King David Hotel is, mm-hmm. right? So the King David Hotel is at the top of that ridge. That's the boundary of Yehuda. You're now southwest of the old city and basically running to Ganav Ha'amon, right? Below the...
Do you have Yerushalayim proper in...
So it appears. It gets more complicated than that, but right now it sounds like he does not have Yerushalayim. Well, he would have today's Yerushalayim. Lo and behold.
Is that Emek Rephaim also correlated to the street, like the Emek Rephaim?
So I don't know about where it is in relation to the street. Emek Rephaim, for them, Valley of the Rephaim, goes back to the Rephaim who are mentioned in the Torah as being this very old tribe, possibly large and dangerous tribe associated with Og and so on. They're mentioned in the War of the Four Kings and the Five Kings. But that's the boundary that you're seeing in Pasuk Chet. And yes, it makes it sound like it's not in, Yerushalayim is not in Yehuda.
Like it goes just below that.
Just below Yerushalayim. So we have two choices about how to then now do this. Is that doing anything or did it? Got it. All right, then just leave it. No, so I'll tell you what we'll... No, don't. It's fine. What we'll do instead, because there are two ways we can go with it. One way would be to continue the northern border. The other is to go through some of this, because we have to discuss two key points regarding Yerushalayim itself before we continue this border. So what we'll do is we'll take the sources here. Next week, are we... Neither?
I can't host next week. Is anyone able to?
Yeah, so I think
can.
I don't know. I'm hosting barbecues Wednesday and
Thursday. I'm just on the other side, though.
I think
the
I
other
can.
Side. The other side of.
I think we'll be the best around the cleaner if that.
No, it doesn't make. The only question is, can whoever's doing it provide a laptop for the border? If no one can, it doesn't matter. But if we have that option,
bring mine.
Yeah, should. I can bring it also. Yeah, you have one.
Okay.
I don't, but Herman usually.
Okay, so Roberta or Shirley, either way.
If you want,
okay. In the meantime, we're going to cover your shell.
I'm for everyone else. I'm on Millcroft.
Got it.
Are we changing the end of June, by the way?
We continue until people can't, which maybe last year that meant the end of school. But, you know, recognizing that we have, you know, multiple populations, I want to, you know, try to satisfy the those who have different concerns about what's happening. But let's take a look at source number 8, because it's here. The boundary that we're getting here, as everyone has noted, is running south of the old city. Let's take a look at source number 8, and a story involving an area in Yerushalayim called Ein Etam. Amri, this is talking about how David and Shmuel decided where the Beis HaMikdash should ultimately be. So Amri, David and Shmuel HaNavi said, look, Ksiv, the Torah says, regarding the Beis HaMikdash, V'kamta v'alisa el hamakom. You're going to get up and you are going to ascend to the place. Melamed sheBeis HaMikdash gavoh mikol Eretz Yisrael. So I guess it should be higher up than the rest of Israel. Eretz Yisrael gavoh mikol ha'aratzos. And Israel itself is higher than all the other lands. That's actually not entirely necessary for the Gemara's point here in terms of geography. They're trying to make the statement that everybody, wherever they live, will always be ascending to go up to the Beis HaMikdash. Yes, it's true that there are, you know, places like, I don't know, Everest that are taller.
Well, what about,
but I wouldn't get caught up in that.
Isn't Lebanon higher than?
There is a Lebanon, yeah. Whether it's intended to be literal, not intended to be literal, is an interesting discussion. But the point that they make here is that there's a play that they decide that's where Beis HaMikdash should be because it's tall. Lo havu yadi duch dehecha, but you know, that doesn't tell me where in this mountainous area I should put it. Isu sefer Yehoshua. So they brought the book of Yehoshua out. Bekulu ksiv v'yarad v'allah ha'gavul. When it describes the various boundaries, it says that boundary goes down, boundary goes up, boundary turns. B'shevet Binyamin ve'alaksiv ve'arad loksiv. When we get to Binyamin, you'll see that it just says it goes up, as we've seen, in fact, in Yehuda towards Yerushalayim. Amri, so they said Shma mina hachu makomo. So they said, oh, that's what it should be. Savor lemivnei ve'ein itaim demidli. So they wanted to build it in Ein Etam because that's the highest of the areas within Yerushalayim. It's even higher than Har HaBayis. Amri, Nisasi Bay Kalil. But they said, no, let's go down a little bit. Why? Going back to your question about the brachos that are given to the Shvatim, here's one correlation. The bracha that Moshe gives to Binyamin, it says, Chofef alav kolayom uvek sefav shachin. He hovers over it all day, and it dwells between his shoulders. So they take it as the Beis HaMikdash. And so it has a higher area around it, and it is a little bit lower down in this area. The Ibayis Ema, or they give an alternative explanation for how we ended up with Ein Etam as the site. Gemiri, we had learned, or they had learned, the Sanhedrin Bechelko de Yehuda Ushchina Bechelko de Binyamin. As we're going to see in later sources, the Sanhedrin is supposed to be in Yehuda's portion. Going back to the Bracha, of Lo Yasur Shevet Mi Yehuda Mechokek Mi Vein Raglav, the scepter and the law-giving staff never leave Yehuda. So Yehuda has to have the Sanhedrin in his portion. But the Shechina is supposed to be in Binyamin's portion. That's a tradition which we're going to have to discuss. The Imadlina Light, if you go all the way up to Ein Etam, Mispalik Tuva, you can't do that. Because Yehuda and Binyamin are too far, are the boundary between Yehuda and Binyamin is too far away. At that point, you can't put your Beis HaMikdash on Ein Etam and still include both Binyamin and Yehuda in it. The Sanhedrin convenes in the Beis HaMikdash. So
Evan Ashdiyah.
Yeah.
was decided upon by Shlomo.
Well, Eben Hashtia, the idea that that's the stone where things started, so to speak, apparently doesn't play a factor in this Gemara's consideration of where to build the Beis HaMikdash. The fact that it works out to be in that spot may have been, you know, what God meant for it to have happened, but they didn't ask the question of where's the Eben Hashtia.
Isn't that strange?
No, to me. I mean, to somebody, the problem and the question, I guess, is how fundamental is this idea? What B is talking about is the idea that the foundation stone of the world is the Eben Hashtia, and that's in the Beis HaMikdash, and that's a stone actually in the Kodesh Kodashim, in the Holy of Holies. The question is, how old is that idea, and how fundamental is that idea? That's really the question. But the Gemara here is not invoking that as part of the calculation of where to put the Beis HaMikdash.
I always envisioned that this was so holy that everybody knew that this was...
Right, it's a good question. If I notice anything about it, it says,
like Haram Moriah was... So according to this Gemara,
they're not concerned. Alternatively, that I could resolve and suggest. I don't know where Ein Etam actually is. It could be that Ein Etam is considered to be part of the same mountain. They don't view them as separate mountains. In other words, it could be somewhere on Har HaMoriah.
A range.
That part is relatively easy to deal with. Eben Hashtia, I don't know what to do with. In other words, the question is where on Har HaMoriah to put it. But they continue by saying
Where do we believe today?
I've heard different things about the Eben Hashtia. Like there's one that the Muslims call the Eben Hashtia, and that we disagree and say it's a different rock. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was that a rock that was there, or that could have been moved to there?
Right. So this one is not supposed to be movable. It's not mobile. So the Gemara says they didn't want to put it all the way up because then you couldn't get Yehuda and Binyamin in the same building. So therefore, they moved it down, and that fulfills the pasuk, Uvein Ksefav Shachein. It ends up being between the shoulders, so to speak. It's not at the highest point. The point for us, what emerges from this, is that it introduces us to the idea that actually Yehuda and Binyamin both have a share in that area where the Beis HaMikdash is. They each have part. And that's something that we'll spell out further in 9 and 10, but that, I guess, we will hold for next week. And